Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
And psychotherapist Richard Hogan joins me now. Well, welcome back, Richard.
Thanks, Brendan.
And Richard, we're going to talk about bullying today, but we've got a lot of texts in. Now, we've a lot of texts. I'll reflect first that a lot of texts of people who enjoyed and inspired by Sinead. People loved hearing Duren read the poem and talk, and also Noel's words at the start of the show. But a lot of people texting about the Leaving Cert. If you casually mention the Leaving Cert on the radio, the intergenerational
explodes.
Trauma comes up and on both sides, right? But there's a text here from Heidi in Tralee, and an email. She said, I was shouting enthusiastically at the radio when you talked about the Leaving Cert. I'm a coach in a rowing club. I attend seminars. I read research about retaining teenagers and particularly girls in sport. From the age of 12, we attempt to coax, encourage, inspire young people. We use variety, communication, challenge, atmosphere, bonding to support all of them to fulfil their potential. All of them achieve, some of them newsworthy achievements nationally or locally. Some of them triumph only in the eyes of club or family. But none of it means anything when they apply to a college, they cannot use this to their advantage. So, and here's her point. Unless they have exceptional support or confidence that will allow them to take the bet that maybe points aren't everything, they leave us. Sometimes just for sixth year, often though for fifth year as well. It breaks my heart. It's a disaster. It's potentially catastrophic. We have by accident as a society taught them that if you're under pressure, bereaved, new parent, project at work, Leaving Cert, whatever, you should abandon what feeds your soul. We need a better way of referring our young people. And I read it and I thought, no, I would have had different reasons for not being on a sports team. All the education I got, I would have been better. If I had been on a sports team, I think I would have probably learned a lot more about life and about people.
Oh, absolutely.
And got on with it. But, but we've set up this system for...
Oh, I think so. And you learn so much about yourself in a team. And that's how you really get feedback from your peers. And I think, absolutely, that breaks my heart too, Brendan. And I've worked in schools for so many years. Yeah. And I always tell Leaving Cert students, we're really going for a lot of points. Having extracurricular and staying in the activity that gives you joy and gives you energy and kind of replenishes you is as important as the study that you're doing. If you exclude everything to the point of just your subjects, you're going to burn out. You have to have that out. You know, you have to have that downtime. You have to be, they're teenagers, 17, 18 years of age. They're so young and they get consumed. I think social media feeds into this too. That to be brilliant, you have to be single focused and laser focused on your thing.
Yeah.
You have to have other aspects to your personality and you have to have that downtime. I think that's really important. And I've worked with some students who've achieved brilliant things and they've always had an activity, to that outlet where they've burnt off energy, you know, and they've reconnected with their sport that they love.
It goes back to, wasn't it, was one of the maxims in your book, wasn't it, that what do you do when you feel good?
Yeah.
Do more of that.
Do more of what makes you feel good. I mean, that's exactly, absolutely it.
Simple.
Yeah, simple.
Okay, so bullying, and I anticipate now we'll get a lot of texts on this, so we might just feel some of them
absolutely.
As we go along. So if we start with children and the school context. Okay, so if your child comes to you and they're being bullied, your first instinct is to fix it for them, obviously.
Is to fix it, yeah. And I would say, first of all, before we really get into it, being targeted by somebody and having people say things about you and excluding you, it's not confined to our playground. It goes on throughout our lives. And it can be one of the most disruptive and disquieting experiences we have as human beings. And it can stay
really?
With us. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's one of the most devastating experiences that we can have if we don't manage it properly. And it's there, you know, I think most of us have experienced it. And I think most of us have been excluded. And some of us might have said terrible things about other people. And so we're all somehow connected to this human experience that's very negative. And so if your child comes to you, and we've always talked here about your own parenting and your own child, you know, I'm going to say your own childhood is always present, right?
Bombs go off in your head.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, bombs go off. And all of a sudden you're reliving that bit of, you know, historical hurt that you had. Someone said something about you, somebody excluded you, and your child is telling you about them being excluded and then being hurt. And so it brings up all of this stuff yourself. So you always have to watch what's coming up for you. That's the first and most important thing. You have to be calm, when they come to you with this experience. As
I think, now you want to go kill somebody. I think
you want to go down to the yard.
Mothers like saying they're homicidal, literally. Yeah. Like, yeah.
You want to go down to the yard and grab that little fellow, whoever, whatever's happening there, and catch him by the neck and say, "You don't do that to my daughter, or you don't do that to my son." But you can, because that's disempowering your child. And so, you know, when you listen to, and this is a real skill that parents need, listening. When you listen to your child and you listen to the experience without rushing, I think dads can be rushed to solve the problem. If you listen to what's going on and what's happening for your child in their dynamics, and you ask questions and you're calm, now they're more likely to come to you again. So when you get excited and you get over, when you get a bit anxious, you're also being victimized by the bully. And so you have to first tip, I would always say, watch your reaction to what's happening for your child, because it is incredibly upsetting for us as parents to hear our child suffer at the hands of some tormentor. So we have to watch that first of all.
Okay. So then you do that through the cold cognition.
Yeah, exactly. The cold cognition. Yeah.
So then. What's next? What is our reaction?
Can I just, before you get to that, here's the key thing I would say, a real thing, early intervention. What I did with my own kids, I did a thing called bully school, right?
Okay, yeah. Great, here we go.
And I used to role play with them, and I'd say, "Come on, guys, we go upstairs and do a bit of bully school." And they'd be like, "Oh, great." And it'd be a bit of crack, and I'd say, "Hannah, your hair looks terrible." And she'd say to me, "God, why would someone say that?" And that's a good question to ask. Why would someone say that?
Okay.
And so you get in there and say, "Why do people say mean things? Would you say that to me about my hair?" "No." "And so why would I say it to you?" "Would it be that you're not really happy? You're not happy about who you..." Yeah. Now you're getting closer to why someone says it. And if you don't believe the person who says it, does it hurt as much as it would if you believed it? And so they were developing, critically evaluate what's happening to them. And so when we go into school, you're kind of immunized to what you're going to hear, because what I'd see working clinically and working in schools is kids go in very cosseted, they go in very coddled, and they expect everything to be a little bit Disney. And I'd love that to be the case, but that's not the lived experience of children. And children say terrible things to each other. Right. And so if you immunize them to it and you explain to them why people say mean things, it's not about you. And this is such an important tip, Brendan, because I sit with so many teenagers who are really hurt and they're living this internalized prejudice. They're telling themselves all the terrible things that was said to them. And so their tormentors might be well gone out of their lives, but they're living it all the time. And so if you get in there and you tell them, well, it could be, as you think it, something to do with you, or it could be that something they see in themselves that they don't like. Now, why do you think someone says something terrible? And so you're arming them with a coping skill. So when they hear someone in the schoolyard or in the staff room later on in your life making a jibe about you or saying something nasty, you're able to internalize that and translate that. That's about them. That's not about me. Now you need some skills. Now the next thing you're going to ask there is, well, what do you do? And so you teach your children how to react to that, because it's in the silent spaces that all this stuff exists. It's in those silent spaces where abuse really thrives. And so you're never silent. When someone says something terrible to you or nasty to you, you teach your child how to manage it. You teach them not to be silent.
So you don't want them to shrink.
You don't want
themselves.
Them to shrink. The minute they shrink, then the person who's targeting, the perpetrator of this thing, sees that they've got an inability to manage themselves. And that is like gold dust to somebody who's trying to make themselves feel better by tormenting somebody else. Because that's ultimately, I've done research around this, and I've interviewed probably over 500 kids around this. And I've interviewed a lot of kids who've done very bad things. First of all, Brendan, I've never met a bad kid. I've met kids who've done bad behaviours, but I've never met a bad kid. And when I ask them about it, you know, why did you do this to somebody? Generally, you hear, I wanted them to, this is what I would have said about all that data. I wanted them to feel what my dad made me feel like, you know, or I wanted them to feel what my brother or sister made me feel like. I wanted them to feel like what happened to me when I was 8. I wanted them to feel what I was, I wanted to feel powerful. And so it's about power and control, but underneath all that is insecurity. And so when you view the person who's saying terrible things about you as insecure, it's a bit empowering, because you can really view them as this powerful, dominating, annexing kind of thing, and they're not that at all.
Okay, so you're not working on the bully here, because you can't, the bully's out of your control.
Yeah.
You're working on the... how you react.
Exactly.
Okay, come here. In terms of that, so you never met a bad kid or whatever, difficult for someone to hear, I'd say, that their child is a bully.
Very hard to hear. And I've worked with this in schools a lot.
Yeah.
And what I'd always say to parents, I'd always frame and say, this is a hard conversation. but we have to try to think about John, let's say, as not your child for a moment and just hear the behaviour first of all, and then we figure out where he's getting these ideas that this is okay to do and why he might have low levels of empathy, because that's a really important thing. And what parents often do is get defensive, Brendan, and they put it back on the school, let's say. And there's nothing to be really kind of gained in that kind of a dynamic. If you hear the school contacts you and says your child is perpetrating this, or you know they're saying these terrible things about someone, it's really important that you listen to what the school is saying and that you don't react in defensive. And you think, you know, a huge thing, Brendan, where would my child be modelled this behaviour from? Why is my child insecure? Why have they such low tolerance for difference? Right. And what are they hearing? And this is what I would, when I work with children a lot, they'd say, I hear my parents and my, you know, my siblings talking about people who are disabled or people who are this or that. And they say terrible things about them. And so I kind of do the same thing. You're kind of going, well, we got to work here to help our children not to think like that. We got to make sure that our children aren't victims of bullies. And we have to also really work hard that our children aren't perpetrators of this stuff. Right, both of those positions are not good for anybody. And so as parents, we have to engage with the school. If we hear that, it's hard, but we have to engage with it and start to think, well, where did he pick this up from, and or she, and how can I help them out of this behaviour? Punishment is one thing, right? But positive reinforcement and helping them to have empathy for others. You know, when your children say something nasty about their sibling, you have to really step in there and teach them, you know, how do you think she felt when you said that? Would you like me to say that to you? So you're trying to develop empathy in your children all the time.
Okay, so when you mentioned there about the school and how people can react to the school and all that, one thing you do hear a lot from parents these days, and you'll have seen this from both ends as a parent and the teacher, I think a lot of people think schools aren't very proactive in dealing with these situations. You hear that a lot,
yeah,
don't you? They're saying the school don't seem to be willing to do anything, and oh, the bully has too many rights here, and the two parties are being treated equally in this situation, even though one of them is clearly the bad person.
Yeah, no, I think schools can at times, and I've worked with this massively, schools can at times make the things, exacerbate the issue. And sometimes the school can bury its head in the sand and think, that's not our issue, that's their issue. You know, and it's really important that schools have really good policies around bullying. And I think we need upskilling for teachers through the teacher training programme to be able to identify bullying and how do you manage bullying in the school system, and actually upskill management as well to how do you really handle bullying effectively. Because a lot of the times it's just wordplay, it's a bit of policy, and that's kind of all that's happening there. Not really an effective intervention when bullying occurs, and nobody wants it in the system. I mean, it's not advantageous for anything, any school system. And so it is important that we're upskilled here as managers.
Okay.
And just on that, just as you said that to me, what came into my mind, I worked with one kid, and I'll change a little bit of the context here, but the teacher made the person who was bullying him stand up in the class and apologize to him. Now you can imagine what happened to that kid after that moment. Not only was he targeted by the kid who was targeting him, other kids started calling him a rat. And so that's just really bad,
right. Yeah.
You know, theory around how you manage bullying. The teacher probably thought that they were doing it, but really exacerbated. And so you have to be very careful how you manage bullying.
And how you intervene.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned exclusion, which does seem to be, is that's a bigger thing than it used to be. Is it like bullying is not taking people's lunch money and beating them up behind the bike sheds. It's all this insidious stuff, isn't it?
I think never in our history as a species have we had more potential to be excluded.
Really?
And exclusion hurts. Brendan, because think about when you were a kid playing down on the GA pitch, when I was in Douglas and Cork, you know, if the lads went down and played in the Douglas GA pitch, I wouldn't have heard about it. Yeah. I wouldn't have known about it. Now, all the girls down Starbucks posting it on Instagram and Twitter and snapping and it's on TikTok. And so not only do you hear about it, you're literally seeing it. And so neuroscience would show us that exclusion hurts as badly and as severely as getting a hit by a hammer in your hand. The same part of the brain fires, the dorsal portion of the anterior cingulate cortex fires when you receive pain. It also fires when you're excluded. And the reason for that is to be excluded, when we started off as Homo sapiens, would mean that you die, you wouldn't be able to survive.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now we're being excluded socially. It's not a life-threatening experience, but it physically hurts us. And so, and I would say for teenage girls, I work with this, and it's really hard to work with it, because they get so isolated so quickly and so excluded. And their friendship group that was once such a thriving and bustling little thing, a little thing happens, one little fallout, and they get pushed outside the friendship group. And now all of a sudden, they're pushed out of they're pushed out of their group on, say, WhatsApp, and then they're not getting inside the group on Snapchat, and they're totally excluded so quickly. And it's really important that we help our children with that. You know, we help than
how
to get.
How do we help with that?
You know what I'd say? I have my own daughter who went into first year this year, and it's interesting for me to see all the theory come into life and all the things that I've been spouting about for years and seeing does it hold up and all that. One of the key tips I was saying, you know, have a big friendship group, wide friendship group. Yeah. Just understand that friendships will come and go. You know, friends will arrive and friends will disappear, as Bob Dylan tells us. Yeah. And that's what just what happens, you know. And sometimes people will say things about you that aren't very nice. And the wider friendship group you are, the less alienated you are. And, you know, if you rely on one person to have that friendship, that can fall apart so quickly and you can become so isolated so quickly. So really, a wide friendship group helps you there.
OK, just to acknowledge from a teacher here, I work in a primary school. We do a lot of training around bullying and behaviour policies. All staff trained in restorative practice. Staff use positive behaviours as a tool to teach children how to treat each other, but also how they feel about themselves. But there are texts also from parents saying, oh, the schools are doing nothing. There are people as well asking about adult bullies.
That's it. And here's the thing, Brendan, I want to say, I'm not saying for a second that confident people don't get bullied, right? Because they do. Anyone can get bullied. No one's immune to being bullied or targeted.
Yeah,
or
we're not going to get into blaming the victim here.
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. But here's something I hold as a truth. The less fearful you are of conflict, I believe the less conflict you have in your life. And people pick up on it. Right? Doesn't mean you're immune to it, but I think the less fearful you are of conflict, the less conflict you have in life, right? And so when you go into a working environment and someone says something about you, tries to alienate you, you have to be able to respond to that. I think what happens to people is they're so terrified of conflict, they're just hoping that it will go away. And that's kind of the thing that fuels it. Again, the silence kind of fuels it. So you have to stand up for yourself. And you have to be able to, what I would say in the working environment is you really need to document absolutely everything that is taking place. You have to get very good at that and you have to boundary yourself around it. That experience doesn't metastasize and become pervasive into your life. You know, when you're coming home to your family and this is still there and you're with your kids and it's still there, it's way too much power to give somebody, you know. And you got to watch that thing first of all. But you do have to document and you do eventually, if it's severe enough, you've got to go to HR and they mightn't even respond well because a lot of managers are not suitable to be in that role and are insecure and have their little inner circle and exclude you and say bad things and reputationally try to damage you and all those kind of things. And as a tip to that, I'd always say to people, the more you upskill yourself, the more powerful you are, because people can feel really trapped in a job, especially when you're 40s. You know, they can feel that the mortgage and the kids and meet all these things, I'm stuck in this job and this boss is this way. And the more little things you put on your CV, the more chance you can get to move away from somebody who is particularly, you know, nasty and not very nice to you.
Yeah. How do adults tend to bully?
Reputational kind of stuff, it's talking behind people's backs. It's always, in the adult world, it's much more passive aggressive. Jibes, you know, comments, typical Brendan, and they'd say something, you know, that constantly putting you down or making comments on your clothes or even, you know, for women, perhaps, you know, someone's brushing off them and that kind of stuff goes on in the workplace all the time. And it's like, you have to be able to manage that. You shouldn't have to manage that, but you have to have a few kind of ideas about what will I do?
And are you calling it out from the get-go?
I would call it out, absolutely.
Because you see, people are thinking then, if I do that, I'm creating a bigger situation here.
It's how you do
if
it,
if I
though.
Challenge this.
No, yeah. But
it all blows up.
See, that's kind of exactly.
Well, so the fear of conflict.
The fear of conflict. And you shouldn't be fearful of conflict. You should be able to stand up. You know, what you're doing there really, Brendan, is respecting yourself. The more respect you have for yourself, you're kind of going, I don't accept this. And, you know, it mightn't resolve. The HR mightn't resolve it. But you're saying, you know, and you're not letting someone take your dignity from you. And you're respecting yourself and you're calling you out and you're saying, what do you mean by that? That's a really good tip I'd always say to someone. What do you mean by that when you say that? Where's the joke? And I know you might say, well, that will probably incite a bit of conflict. Yeah, it might do. But it will make the person who's saying things about you think twice. He calls me out on it.
So you might have to embrace conflict, but it might be only once.
It might be only once.
Rather than having to ignore it 50 times.
And if you say to somebody, you know, what do you mean by that joke? Where's the joke there? They're less likely to go, I'm going to make fun of Richard here now today.
If you're bullied as a child, and again, let's be very careful about kind of blaming the victim. If you're bullied as a child, do you carry that imprint, do you think, into adulthood? Can you send off signals? Yeah,
absolutely. I think that's why I was saying it's one of the most devastating experiences we have as human beings, because long after those tormentors have gone, I think you can live with what they've said to you, and it's internalized prejudice, and you lived by their ideas about you, and then you meet someone in work who's a bit boorish, a bit dominant, a bit strong, and all of a sudden you collapse again under
the body
it.
Remembers. remembers
the body. Body keeps the score on that one for sure.
Okay.
And it's like what I do with teenagers is untangle their understanding of what that was about. That wasn't about you. That was about the person who said that about you. And they weren't strong. They were weak. You weren't vulnerable. They were weak. That's the key thing to pass on here to a child. Yeah. Try to re-empower them after such a negative experience.
Okay. It's not about you.
No, it's not.
I think there's a couple of texts there of people who feel bullied by friends. Is that a,
yeah,
a common thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a very common thing. And I'm thinking about my own friends growing up in Cork. We said terrible things to each other.
Like, yeah.
And it made us a bit strong.
We're all in trouble. Anyone from Cork's definitely in trouble.
I mean, my friends, it was the best put down you could think of. It was the kind of, had the best value kind of thing. But, you know,
the intent wasn't to undermine
or belittle
or anything.
There's a difference. Yeah. My friends could say anything to me, but somebody else who doesn't know me said the same thing. It's the meaning behind it, of course. And again, I would pull it up. And I've worked with this with teenagers whose friends are saying terrible things to them. And I'd say, and I've worked with people who've said these terrible things, and I'd say, do you realise what you said and the impact that that had on that person? And they don't really realise the impact it's had on that person. And I would say, if it's your friendship group and you like them, I would probably point out, we don't want to seem weak and vulnerable, but that's actually your strength, by saying, Brendan, you know, when you say about my whatever it is, I don't like that, it actually really annoys me. You might have a really authentic conversation once, you know. And,
yeah.
Okay, I won't say that.
That most people listening go, oh, God, I'm not doing that. Yeah. Like, that'll only set him or off. Like,
no, depending on your friendship group now, you know. Yeah. And I would say that might be something that you might have to say to someone. I don't like when you say that.
Yeah. See, when someone is jokey and you then call them out, the rest of the workers think you're not any fun. It is a minefield, isn't it? Because isn't that the kind of thing
that's
a bully
thing
would do then?
No,
go,
you see, here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
This is exactly it. Someone's mocking your clothes in front of all the lads and all this kind of, look at your man wearing skinny jeans and he's 40 and everyone's laughing. You're kind of sitting there. You're the butt of the joke, right? And so what you need to do there is put it back on the person. What do you know, when you say something like that, you sound really weak. Put it back on the person. You know, when you make.
Okay, and I say back to you, can you not
take a joke?
What's your problem?
No, but exactly.
And then I go away to other people and say, Jesus, Richard's very different.
Brendan,
isn't
no, hang on.
He can't take the rough and tumble of the day to day life.
Here it is when you say to me, you know, can you not take a joke? And then you walk off and go, fucking hell, I got caught there in that one.
Okay,
say, what's the joke, Brendan?
Okay.
Can you explain the joke to me?
Okay.
Where's the humour? What? That,
okay, I walk away now and I'll just say to you, Richard's difficult. Stay away from Richard.
You might be saying, I won't say that to Richard again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I was just trying to kind of follow through. I'm not saying I would do. Can we make it clear that I would not do that in a real life work situation? It's my first time doing bully school. He's better at it than me. And
he mocked my clothes when I came in here.
Look, there's more people saying the narrative about bullying in schools is unfair. They spend enormous effort. We're accepting all that.
Yeah.
But equally, we'll accept that, you know, lived experience and everything, a lot of parents do feel a little bit unheard, I think, in these situations. Come here, in terms of the friendship, adult bullying or in the family and stuff, which we've kind of talked a bit about before, where are you on, you know, the cut all the toxic people out of your life kind of vibe that we get these days.
Yeah.
It's a bit drastic, is it?
It can be that, yeah, it can be. The way I would look at it is, you don't cut out people who are suffering and struggling and all that, who are, you know, you don't have only friends who are bringing like positivity to you all the time, of course. But again, I would evaluate the friends that are friends, you know, and are important to you. And if someone is constantly putting you down and is not a positive person in your life, I would reevaluate that. I'm not saying you cut them out. I would reevaluate that and think, you know, what is the dynamic here and why are we friends? Sometimes we want to move on from a friendship or our friendship with someone, but we're frightened that we might lose some friends as a result of that, and so we stay in a negative relationship. And I would just say, you know, evaluate what's good for your life and what you want in your life.
Yeah, yeah, it is an interesting one. Like that, you're kind of suggesting that people need to have quite authentic conversations with their friends, and in weird ways, we go on with people for years, and you have a certain way of relating to them, but you don't have those kind of conversations.
No.
Yeah, okay.
You don't have any authenticity.
but it could be a laugh.
Yeah, it could be good fun. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, my daughter is being targeted by the same girl online, in school, on the bus. You see, That's all the problem. Pervasive with homophobia. Won't let me contact the school as she feels it will get worse. Should I contact the school? I'd say that's a classic situation.
That is absolutely, and for the teachers and maybe management are writing in. Yes, schools are really getting better at this stuff. There's no doubt about it. And there's lots of training going on there for sure. Okay. Absolutely.
So this case here.
This case there, I would say you do need to contact the school if it's that pervasive, but you need to contact the school and the proviso that they're not going to. You want to hear their response. What are they going to do? Because your daughter doesn't want to be further targeted in it, and if it comes out that your daughter talked to the school, you know, she's going to be further targeted. So this has to be, and I've done this myself as a teacher.
Okay.
Parents have contacted me with exactly that story. And so what you're doing is you're trying to look out for that behaviour to catch it happening in the act, right? So when the school system is aware that this girl is targeting this girl around her sexuality and she's making these comments, you'd say as management, watch out for it. We need to catch it. We're not going to pull her up on it before we catch it. We need to catch it happening.
Okay, so and you're saying to the school, I do not want you to go in hard with an intervention.
No.
I'm making you aware of a situation,
yes,
and I would like you to
deal with it. We'll work together, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And this is the key, Bernard, and I would say to parents, you can be quite quick to get conflicted with the school if they don't respond as quickly as you want them to respond. Watch that, because the last thing you want to do is have a conflict with the school and then your child feels that mom and dad are outside the school or they're being, you know, not relating to the school positively, and they can feel even further victimized there. So make sure that your reaction isn't to blame the school, but to work, you know, in a cooperative way with the school.
Yeah,
you know, that's a really key thing.
Because if everyone gets into their
silos,
to speak. Yeah. Listen, here's one just before we finish up. I'm a woman in my 40s. I have a friend who's extremely passive aggressive, who constantly calls me out in a covert way for anything that doesn't suit her.
Classic Irish.
I'm struggling to deal with it. I'm distancing myself, but honestly, I want to clip it. How do I do that?
I mean, for a question, I'd ask her if I was able to, what do you think that would sound like? It might require an authentic conversation with the person.
Or just go.
Or it might require you to decide that this relationship hasn't much value in my life anymore. And it's actually
I think she's decided that, but she's wondering, how does she get away? Like, how does she get out of it?
I mean, how do we end relationships?
How do we do that?
Yeah. How do we generally end relationships? Yeah. In an Irish way, we probably ghost each other.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one way that we do it. Or you could have an authentic conversation with someone and say what you're feeling. I mean, that's kind of a shocking idea for us as being Irish. But it might be, you know, an important thing to have an actual authentic conversation and actually express what it is that you feel in those moments.
And you know what? There might be something salvageable there.
There could
absolutely do.
If you did that, you might actually find someone say, I didn't realise you actually, I'm so sorry, Anne. You just don't know how it's going to go. But when you ghost, you have no understanding. But if you actually express it, you might.
Okay. Richard Hogan, thank you as always. We'll just finish with this text. I still remember the guy who bullied me in pre-primary school. He made me feel worthless. He stayed with me. I'm 50 years of age now. Mm. So the thing to remember, it's not about you.
Not you.
Not about
not you.
You
then.
About them. Richard Hogan, thank you. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.